Voices of Hope is a podcast of New Hope Presbyterian Church in Castle Rock, Colorado. You can listen to our sermons and other podcasts on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or any popular podcasting platform. Our worship times are on Sundays at 9 and 10:45 a.m. This week, Pastor Russ concludes our series, The Gratitude Project, with a sermon titled, The Legacy of Leftovers.
There's not enough. I wonder if you found yourself thinking that this last week, and I'll bet you did if you were in charge of anything close to the food for a large group. I don't think we have enough. That's the common anxiety. At our house, we were getting ready to go to a Thanksgiving dinner that had about 20 plus people, and my job was to bring the turkeys. And I'm trying to imagine how who's going to eat what do we have. I don't think we have enough. I wanted to start there because as we do this thing called the Gratitude Project and wrap that up today, there is a question, there's a problem, and it is how can you be grateful when there is not enough? How do you get to nurture this sense of gratitude if you're already worried that what you have isn't going to be enough? Now, it goes beyond Thanksgiving, obviously. This goes on to life. And before I go any further, just to answer the question that was raised earlier, an Ebenezer is a pole that in the Old Testament was pretty much a sign of hope. When people looked to it, they were healed. And so long before it was the name of a person, it was this sign of hope that when you look to, things got better. And I always wondered if Charles Dickens had that in mind when he named his principal in the Christmas Carol, Ebenezer Scrooge, because by looking at him, there would be hope. As for the red sweater vest, that's just a mystery. I got nothing on that one. But I did want to get to that one. I thought that actually does apply too, because in the midst of where do you look for signs of hope? And for what we look for signs of hope, where we look and when we look, we get better, we look to a story like we just heard. Because when we look there, something begins to happen. It's not just Thanksgiving. If that's all it were, this would be easy. But there are questions of, will I have enough? Will I have enough energy? Will I have enough time? Will I have enough patience? Will I have enough wisdom? Will I have enough faith? Will I have enough strength? You know, pretty much the portfolio of every parent around Christmas time, if they're going to make it, will we have enough to get through this? Or will we have enough to get through life? Or will I have enough to get through this next crisis? It is this underlying thing that if we don't address, we're missing it, because it is here is where life gets very real. How do you nurture gratitude when the underlying suspicion is you just don't have enough? So we have this feeding of the 5,000, and in this feeding of the 5,000 is this story and it's a miracle. And by the way, it is the only miracle of Jesus that is in all four Gospels. Which tells you something, which tells you that no matter who you are, if you're writing about Jesus, this somehow becomes the template, this somehow becomes the model of what all miracles are. Miracles in the New Testament basically have two purposes. One is they point to God's will and intent as the kingdom of God arrives. It's a preview of what is to come. It doesn't solve everything, but it is sort of a foretaste. It is a bit of a preview. So this miracle doesn't mean that everybody is fed everywhere and the world hunger has stopped, but it is a preview which gives you a glimpse into what God's intent is. And the second thing it does, it says, it points to that Jesus is the one who's inaugurating that day. It is beginning now. It is there where we begin to see what is going on. So on the one hand, here's what God is looking for. And so throughout the Old Testament and later on, this idea of God, of the world that is feasting. The last scene in the Bible is around a feast where everybody is filled. There is always enough. Think Thanksgiving without the calories or the sugar coma, and you're kind of in the right zone. But then it says, and now
And now it's begun. That's how we know that Jesus is Christ. That's how we know that he's the Messiah. That's how we know that he is the one who has come to bring in the new age, because it has begun. It is the first signs of spring in the middle of winter, or it is the first signs of Christmas somewhere around August, that says that something is coming, and pay attention. It's not here yet, but you can begin to lean into it. The presence of Christ is what a miracle does. The presence of Christ somehow takes what is not enough and makes it enough. That's pretty much what those miracles do. And that's what this one is about. And there's controversy about, well, what was it? What was the actual miracle? And the traditional is that somehow Jesus took the five loaves and two fish, and it's just sort of out of magic, just multiplied, and everybody had enough. And others say, well, actually the miracle was that Jesus moved people's hearts, because nobody in the ancient world would walk around without food, but they would keep it in their pockets or the folds of their robe and their sleeves, and nobody wanted to bring it out because nobody thought there was enough to feed everybody, so everybody was hoarding it. And somehow what happened was Jesus moved people's hearts, and at the end, there was enough. I don't think you have to choose, because the end result is the same. So whether it just kind of spontaneously appeared or whether it finally was released by grateful and hopeful people, it's kind of a miracle either way. But the point is not the how. This is not a miracle about the mechanics of the how it happened. The spotlight on this is the leftovers. They all ate and were satisfied. And what was left was gathered up, filling 12 baskets. It is the legacy of leftovers that it becomes what the sign of a miracle. And whether it is bread and fish, whether it is from sorrow, now there is joy, from where there was sickness, and now there is health, where there was death, now there is life, it's all the same. It is that somehow that Jesus comes and the presence of Christ takes what is not enough and somehow makes it so that it's more than enough. And it's a sign that God is in our presence. God is here and God is active, and we get to live differently. So here's the question. What if we don't live differently? What if we keep living anxiously? In my house, if I'm making turkeys for Thanksgiving, and I've made them for years, and every year I just am all anxious and running around, either I have a bad memory, because it's not that hard to remember portions, or maybe I'm just addicted to anxiety. I just like the crisis mode. So either I've got a bad memory, or I've just kind of become unhinged, and that's sort of what Jesus's point is too. I know that because in the Gospel of Mark, Jesus takes his apostles to task because they are actually doing the same thing. Again and again, they're going, we don't have enough. We don't have enough. Oh my goodness, what are we going to do? We don't have enough. And so Jesus says, why are you talking? This is now the third time that they've said this. Why are you now talking about no bread? Don't you perceive? Don't you understand? Are your hearts hardened? Do you have eyes and fail to see? Do you have ears and fail to hear? Do you not remember? And then he goes back and says, when I broke the five loaves for the 5,000, how many baskets full of broken pieces did you collect?
12.
And the 7 for the 4,000, how many baskets full of broken pieces did you collect?
7.
Do you not yet understand? Do you not yet understand? That's a question for us in our anxieties, as we are constantly worried whether we have enough. And again, it goes so much beyond turkey. This has to do with, do you not understand when you say, I don't have enough, I'm worried. I don't know if I'm going to have the right words. I don't know if I'm going to have the right strength. I don't know if I'm going to have the right wisdom. Do you not understand? Think back. Can you recall all the times that you came into a situation when you didn't have enough and you left and there was more than enough? That is the power
of remembering. That's the power of our gratitude journals, those books that are available even today, those books where I've invited you to say, hey, at the end of the day, just go back. What were the gifts of the day? Can you remember what that is? Because as you do, that increases our memory. That increases our ability to look back. Oh, yeah, that day there was more than enough. And that day there was more than enough. And that day was... After a while, you begin to face the day that's ahead and you're going, I wonder if I'll have enough. Oh, yeah, I bet I do. That's the power of this. If you haven't already, I would encourage you, start a journal. Write it down. Speak it into a microphone. Do something where you get to just track every day. Where were the gifts of that day? That's our Thanksgiving tree as well, where you're invited to take a leaf and just write one word, a short phrase, and put it on the tree. As a congregation, we get to do that. We get to point to all the times where it was enough, where there was more than enough, despite all our anxieties and all our sleepless nights and all the times that we worried. Because when we are full of anxiety, not only is it hard to be grateful, it is hard to see God and what God is doing. Do you not understand, Jesus says? Can you not remember? It is while we remember the past and all the places where God showed up that we can have courage and faith and strength in the present. Where are you anxious this morning? Where has God showed up? Megan mentioned that yesterday we had a memorial service for Sam Barklage. And if there ever was a time when people go, I don't think we have enough, that's one of those times. Here's this 26-year-old who dies and grew up in our congregation. And here's Joy and EJ. And Joy and EJ are always the ones who are comforting everybody else in their time of trouble. Oh, my gosh. Who has enough of the right words? Who's got enough wisdom? Who's got enough faith? Who's got enough discernment? Let alone the mechanics. Are we going to have enough food for everybody? How many chairs are we going to need? It is so easy to walk into, and as we get ready for, to come up to that kind of a situation and go, we just don't have enough. How are we ever going to fill that Grand Canyon of need? And then we get here. And just like in the miracle, what happens is we offer what we have. It's not enough. And somehow, God starts making it enough. It began with E.J. himself, as he is recalling this wonderful quote from Frederick Buechner. It's one of my favorites as well. He says, this is what God is saying every day you wake up. Here's the world. Beautiful and terrible things will happen. Don't be afraid. I'm with you. The kingdom of God is not fully here yet. Beautiful and terrible things happen. Don't worry. I'm with you. Don't be afraid. That's the invitation. And as people came and their presence and the sharing that went on and the pictures and the warmth and the caring, at the end of the day yesterday, I have to tell you how full my heart was to step back and see the way that a church cared for this family. And no one of us had anywhere close to enough of anything. And yet there was this, we're here and we're offering what we've got. And somehow God takes that. And we all walked away with more than we walked in at the beginning. There was something of people coming around, people who were hurting and blessing them. And a family coming in from miles and miles and loving them. There was incidences of people sharing, and there was Tammy who sang, and then earlier in the week she had texted the youth group and say, hey, look, I'm doing this, and it's for EJ, and EJ is one of our youth advisors, and it would be wonderful if you would come. Are you in? And if you're in, would you mind being part of the song where you do sign language? And how many people said, I'm in. And when that part of the service came, I thought I was hanging in there until that happened. And then that was it. I was pretty much undone. I thought I was going to need sign language for the rest of the service because there's no more words. It's not that terrible things don't happen. They do. And they overwhelm us. But even there, when we get to those God-forsaken places in this life, what we do is we bump into the God-forsaken one who precedes us, the one who hung on the cross and said, my God, why have you forsaken me? And so that God, Jesus can be Lord not only of the victories, but Jesus can be Lord of the God-forsaken. And there's nothing we're going to go through that Jesus isn't already there. Listen, here's the world. You're going to have beautiful and terrible things happen. Don't be afraid. I'm with you. And I don't know if you could see it, but yesterday was one of those days that if you step back and what were the gifts of the day, you could say Christ is here. Christ was manifest. Christ was embodied. Christ was expressed through the giving and the sharing of a congregation. There is nothing like a congregation, a local congregation, that can change the world. And yesterday was an example of that. There's nothing like that. And that was something I went home with, grateful to be a part in the midst of a day that I would rather not ever have to touch. And yet, that was the season we were in, and there was something powerful. So this morning, as we go to prayer, I'm going to suggest that what you do is we're going to take some time just to be quiet for a few moments. And I want you to revel in. I want you to step back and think in your mind, where are the gifts of the day? Where have been the gifts of this week? Where have been the gifts in your life as we go to prayer this day? That was lovely. Thank you. And we do have a lot to be thankful for. And we're going to close here in just a few moments with just a time of what does this have to do with us, kind of a quiet time of abiding prayer. But before we do that, one last thought. And it is this question. What if we waited until we had enough before we did something? What if we waited until we had enough wisdom, we had enough strength, we had enough faith, we had enough patience before we would wade into the problems that are in front of us? What would happen then? And the answer is not much. The answer is not unlike the disciples as they looked and just said, send them home. We haven't got enough. Send them home. And they're thinking they're solving the problem. But what they're doing is they are limiting the amount of what God can do to their feelings of inadequacy of what they've got. And what they've got, it's not enough. When it is offered in gratitude, the little that we have, God not only it often makes it more than enough. Not only does it reveal what's there, it releases the abundance that is yet to be. But when we bring anxiety to this, we freeze ourselves and everything stops. Anxiety stops us not only from seeing God, but here's the other part. It also stops us from seeing one another. It stops us from seeing the people. Because those people that are there, they're no longer people. They're just a hungry mob. They're just those hungry people. They are problems now that need to be solved. They are demands that make us feel bad. They make us feel inadequate. We even begin to resent them because of what they represent. That's what our anxiety does when we are so anxious and we are wrapped up only with what we think we can do and we limit ourselves only to our own resources that we can see. They become annoyances. That's why I loved what a theologian who was talking about the way that we approach problems in this world. And he had a particular heart for the handicapped and the poor. He says, the handicapped, they're not our problem. We are theirs. We are their problem because we keep approaching them as a problem to be solved. We approach the issue of whether it's handicapped or chronically sick or the mentally challenged or the poor among us. We look at them and we see them as a group. It's a set of demands that we don't have enough for. We feel inadequate. We begin to resent. We can't see the humanity, because what we have done is we have focused only on our own inadequacies, only on what we don't think we can do. We've made the problem the thing rather than the presence of God that is already here, and asking the question, what would Christ be wanting to do today? And what can I offer to make that happen? Who are the people that you treat, that we treat, as problems, as annoyances? Who do we end up resenting? When we realize what God is trying to do, as we are encouraged to gratefully offer what we've got, as little as it is and as inadequate as it will inevitably be, when we begin to do that, we begin to change everything. We begin to reframe it. So it's not just the good things that happen to us. Now it becomes the problems themselves that become the gifts of the day, because now they become the occasion where we begin to see God work in new ways. I'll say that again. When we begin to catch what this miracle is about, what Jesus is doing, what Jesus calls us to do, then even the problems of the day become gifts of the day. Even the times when we start and go, I don't have enough, that becomes part of the gift. It becomes the necessary beginning for what God could yet do. Where do you feel like you don't have enough? As you're looking ahead to this week, this season, where do you feel completely inadequate? Shannon is going to take us through a time of abiding prayer to see what has our name on it this day.